Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. Facebook a while ago announced it was going to form an oversight board in order to normalize some of the rather arbitrary rules it uses to enforce content moderation on its platform. Quite recently, it's actually announced a list of 20 people who are going to be on the oversight board. People on social media are calling this Facebook's quote-unquote Supreme Court. But to actually understand how Facebook's Supreme Court or its oversight board is going to work in practice and how it's actually going to influence content moderation on the platform, I have with me today Prateek Wagre and Rohan Seth. So over to you, Rohan. Can you tell us a little bit about what exactly this oversight board is and how it might function?
Sure. So I want to start by asking the question and answering it about how did we get here and why we are here in the first place. And as you know, that Facebook is actually a pretty huge company and they have a user base of over 2 billion people now. So basically, a lot of these people post stuff that may or may not belong on the internet. So generally, we had this sort of problem of content moderation being handled by Facebook, and you had this thing called a Facebook product policy forum, if I'm not butchering that. And so the idea was that a group of people would get together, they would have a bunch of slides and they'd talk about what stays up, what stays down, the problems of Facebook. So that was basically their attempt at being transparent. What ended up happening was that there was a lot of backlash on these people not being transparent enough. And people didn't know what principles Facebook abided by on why things were staying up, why things were going down. And to sort of address that, Facebook basically said, we'll make this oversight board, and which will allow you more transparency into what the key principles of speech on these platforms are, and what stays up, what stays down. We'll have a reason for all those questions. So they basically put $130 million in a trust and made it independent, made it into an oversight board. Now there's like 20 members to make progress on this and get the ball rolling.
So how do you think this might actually work out in practice? Now that you have this board, it doesn't really sound like much of a Supreme Court to me, right? It seems more like it's just there to kind of bring a little bit of structure to Facebook's decisions in terms of how content moderation happens. So considering the sheer amount of content that's always going up on Facebook every single second of the day, how might this actually work in practice?
So that's actually a pretty good question, in the sense that the broad answer to that is we don't know yet. But let me just try and add some nuance to it. So earlier last week, I was asked by The Print to do a talk point. And the question there was that, is this going to make internet a safer place? So the short answer is no, and time will tell. But at the same time, if you just look at the mechanics of this, look at how much content is posted on Facebook. That's a lot of content, tens of thousands of posts every week, maybe hundreds of thousands a year. And so much of it has to be vetted about whether or not it's spreading misinformation, whether it's harassment or bullying. And so there is no way that one board of even 50,000 people will be able to address this, right? And so Facebook has gone with 20 people, and not all of them are, I don't think any of them are full-time employees at Facebook. They have their own other jobs. And they've said that they'll be contributing an average of 15 hours a month, which is not a lot. Right?
Wow, 15 hours. Oh my God. Looks like they're going to solve misinformation once and for all.
Yes. I mean, the other alternative basically is that you hire every journalist on the planet and then fall short. So they said they'll contribute 15 hours a month, and they'll be trying to make a dent. And the only way that I see this board doing meaningful work is by outlining key principles as to what guides content moderation on Facebook. So in principle, that means that you outline what stays up, what stays down, not by every piece of content, but by outlining what went behind those judgments. And there's a bunch of other stuff that we'll get into about how this board introduces transparency. But in general, if they can just codify what free speech on Facebook means, I think there can be meaningful work done around misinformation.
Look, at best, this is an experiment, right? To your point of how much content there is, I think Facebook releases that data periodically. And I think till a couple of quarters ago, they take down 12 billion pieces of content per quarter, right? So there is a lot. There's a lot that goes up. There's a lot that goes down. The other thing to keep in mind is that Facebook is present in over 100 countries, right? So for one board to manage that, the type of diversity that's required is always going to be hard. But I think with the first 20 members of the, planned 40, the first 20 that they've announced, Facebook has said that they've got coverage of about, 27 countries and 29 languages, right? It's a good talking point, right? So they're making the right noises. They're trying to do the right things. As Rohan said, I think how it works in the long term is really that. It's something that we'll have to see, right? And in the other thing to keep in mind is that as of now, their scope is limited to only content that's been taken down, right? So they can't really get involved in any way if you believe content that should have been taken down has stayed up, right? As of now, that's not part of the board's charter. And of course, there's a lot more to Facebook than just content moderation, right? In today's world, as platform governance becomes an issue, there's a lot more to it. I think the term Supreme Court, I personally don't like it. It's definitely a content oversight board or a content moderation. It has that element to it, but yeah, I think the term Supreme Court is a huge misnomer.
So I agree with the term being a misnomer, but I also really like it because it's like the right way to do clickbait. But what I do want to talk about is the court's power. Mark Zuckerberg has, a few weeks ago said that whatever the court says is going to be binding. And when this whole discussion started and the board was being formulated, there's a lot of debate on whether or not the decisions by the court are going to be final and whether Facebook can just veto them because, Zuckerberg has so much power, it just doesn't make any sense to try to supersede them. What this particular court or board does is that it has power in very specific cases. So if there has been an appeal, for that particular appeal, this court will be the final judge. But this does not necessarily mean that the court's decision will be applied to all similar or identical cases across Facebook, which is a lot of cases. And so the reason behind that is that Facebook has gone ahead and said that we will try to implement the board's decisions for similar identity cases so as far as operationally feasible. And there's some finer print there that you can read up. I think it's on TechCrunch or whatever. But so the idea is that as long as the court recommends things that Facebook can, the engineers can sort of implement across platforms, it's fine. But let's say the court tomorrow decides to say that, well, we need to shut down newsfeed. This sort of statement gives Facebook power to say that you can only talk about that one particular case, but you can't actually, as a board, recommend that we make sweeping changes across just because it applied in that one case. And I think that's a pretty interesting way to frame a board, right? And so in particular cases, the power is binding, but in reality, it's sort of very limited to just having a judgment on, let's say, 20 out of 12 billion cases, as Prateek put it, which is less than a drop in the ocean. Or maybe I'm getting my math wrong, but it's pretty significantly less.
So that's exactly why I am personally a little cynical about how well the board is going to operate. And as Prateek said, it's fairly diverse, linguistically, ethnically, racially. So it seems like Facebook is interested in making the right noises. It feels like it wants a signal to the world that it is serious, at least in principle, about content moderation. But in practice, there are so many ifs and buts, so many limits on the board's capacity that I really doubt how much change it's going to be able to make, right? I mean, I'm just thinking, let's say a purely hypothetical leader, let's say there's a deepfake of him saying that $2,000 notes will have infrared locators in them. That can be taken down. But let's say the person who's put it up like goes to the board, appeals it. There's no guarantee that of all the billions, trillions of pieces of content that's out there on the internet, they'll actually get to that particular piece of content and resolve it, right? And even let's say they do that, let's say there's another deepfake of that leader saying that beating on plates will cure you of COVID-19. There's no reason why that rule would apply, right? If I'm understanding you guys correctly.
So firstly, I would like to just commend you on how subtle those examples were, Anirudh. Great job, man. Secondly, I just want to look at those particular instances, right? So let me just take this on a step-by-step basis. So you have, let's say, a piece of misinformation that says that if you burn enough candles, coronavirus will go away. So that's a piece of misinformation that is appealed to the, I'm going to call it the Supreme Court because I like the term. So it goes to the Supreme Court. And so once every quarter, let's say the Supreme Court releases, let's say a PDF on what are the biggest challenges facing the platform right now. And that's the first sort of induced step in transparency, is that we find out whether harassment is the most common challenge, whether it's misinformation, whether it's bullying, so on and so forth. So that's a bit of transparency embedded in the process right there. And then the court decides that this particular piece of thing, that we'll try to take up this piece of misinformation and see whether or not it stays up. So here it's telling you that out of all these cases, we think that this particular piece of misinformation is going to be a problem in the coming future. So it takes up that case and it basically tells you, I don't know what the judgment over there is going to be. My prediction is that they'll basically go with the free speech argument, but we have to see that. And they basically say that we made this decision and here is why we did that. And what ends up happening is that any post that is similar, so let's say you have 500 followers of that particular political leader who make repost or share the same thing, we will see whether or not Facebook will or will not remove those posts, because that also depends on Facebook's own discretion. But we'll see how that happens. So that's how the process is going to work, sort of in a nutshell.
And a good example of that is what's happening with the Plandemic documentary right now, right? Technically, it's supposed to be, it's off the platforms, but you're seeing it come up in different versions. Some of them not even that heavily edited, which arguably, you should be able to detect. I'm saying arguably, but it's going to be interesting to see, right? For example, how they would be able to handle what the board decision would be on a case like that, because again, currently they would not be able to look into such a case, right? The other interesting thing to note is that the case timeline, I think, is around 90 days, right? For up to 90 days. So that's another interesting thing, right? Because if you are appealing your content being taken down, 90 days in the age of social media is, I don't know what's longer than eternity. Right, because I think I'm borrowing this from somewhere, I don't remember who, but virality lost is virality denied. I know it's justice delayed is justice denied, but there's this version floating around in this context as well.
So one thing I'm still not totally clear on is, Rohan, you mentioned that this oversight board would come out with periodic reports about the biggest challenges the platform is facing, but how exactly do they decide to look at one piece of content and not all the other bajillions of appeals that people are going to be making, right? Because even with a 90 day sort of timeline, these people are only, there's 20 people dedicating 15 hours a week. That's just barely 1200 man hours per month. How off the mark am I?
It's 15 hours a month. So
15 hours a month. Wow, that's peanuts. But yeah, so you're saying that the entire board is committing 300 man hours per month to looking at God knows how many pieces of content that people are appealing. It just seems to me that even one piece of content could potentially be discussed for hours, because there are a lot of complexities that go into free speech arguments, right? Determining the limits of free speech. It does not seem realistic to me to expect that an awful lot of decisions made by the Facebook algorithms, made by the Facebook content moderators, are actually going to successfully be appealed. So can you tell me a little more about how that mechanism might actually work?
Sure. So I think the idea here is that the board optimistically considers 20 cases a year, right? And so they get a bajillion cases, a bajillion appeals saying that this should be taken down, that should be taken down, whatever. So it's hard to know the parameters through which these 20 cases are going to be selected. But we can try and make an educated guess. And my personal favorite parameter here is that they're likely going to look at cases that have a lot of intersections between problems that the platform faces. So let's say a case that combines harassment with misinformation would sort of be ranked higher than a case that just talks about misinformation. They'll try to address more sort of things that plague the platform in lesser number of cases, that they can cover more ground, as much ground as is humanly possible by 20 people who are committing 15 hours a month each. So that's broadly how I imagine this working. We'll, of course, see what other parameters they add, but I feel like cross-dimensionality is going to be number one here.
Okay, fair enough. So I'd like to like invite you guys to engage with me in a bit of a thought experiment, right? Which is something that's popped into my mind while we were preparing for this podcast. And also since I've been spending an inordinate amount of time on Reddit looking at memes during this lockdown, one thing that I think really works in Reddit is the fact that it has community moderation. That every subreddit basically has rules that determine what can go up, what can't go up, and people who aren't comfortable with certain kind of subreddits basically leave and look at whatever the hell they want elsewhere. So also, since you, Rohan, you said that you find the term Supreme Court very compelling in this case, right? I was just thinking, given that Facebook has so many features that really seem faintly reminiscent of a nation state, right? It has a certain kind of territory in cyberspace. It has a certain kind of quote-unquote contract with its users. It provides them with certain kinds of services. It does kind of police what is available on its platform in certain kinds of ways. And now it has a board that also like kind of lays out principles that's at least theoretically independent of what the Facebook stockholders, what the Facebook CEO want on the platform, right? So I was just thinking, what if Facebook just takes that final leap? They were trying a little earlier to, you know, make a currency of their own, which really didn't go anywhere. But what if they were to really make that leap towards actually developing the institutions of a nation state? Now, let me just clarify what I mean by that. Now, when you look at modern nation states, you see that you have multiple organs of the state that are theoretically at least independent of each other, that theoretically at least hold each other to account, and thus ensure that a certain kind of agreement with its citizens is upheld. So, citizens will have decision-making bodies that determine the overall path of the nation state. You will have a body that actually goes and executes the ideas that the citizens' body comes up with. And finally, you will have an independent court system that holds the executive to account, as it were. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that that is exactly what Facebook should be doing. But I just find that idea to be very compelling. The idea that you can have a decentralized system of courts that basically look at content that's going up on Facebook, that's being taken down from Facebook. You have an executive of Facebook, basically the entire structure that's held by Mark Zuckerberg, that is responsible for enforcing decisions that are made by either community bodies or by multiple oversight boards in like multiple jurisdictions. Quote-unquote jurisdictions that are more responsive to local conditions. Because I was just thinking, you can make the 20-member oversight board as representative and as diverse as you possibly can, but it's still a drop in the ocean compared to the world's diversity, compared to the diverse number of places where Facebook is actually used and or misused. So how do you guys think? Do you think that this model could be a realistic way to regulate cyberspace going forward, or at least to regulate big social media firms?
Okay, so that's an interesting way of looking at it. So I think, one of the things that Facebook has also said is that they expect this can sort of work like plug-and-play solution for other platforms as well. Right? That sort of ties into the point of what you were saying about it being a broader way or larger way to govern cyberspace itself. Now, a couple of people have expressed concerns about that, right? In terms of if this were to become a norm, I think there are a set of challenges with that, right? Because if you're mandating that every company has to set up their own, again, I won't say Supreme Court, but let's say every company has set up their own multidisciplinary oversight board, right? It is putting a lot of overheads on different companies. Can companies plug into the same board, right? I think that it creates a lot of issues. Let me just quote Daphne Keller, who heads the Stanford Cyber Policy Center, right? And I think she said that if this mechanism were to move more and more of the internet towards a single set of rules,
that's going to be a really big loss, right? I sort of agree with that because you know that level of uniformity across or you know, that binding path from one oversight board where we don't really know how this is going to work, right? At this point, and then if you're saying that this is going to become a norm for the internet, or governments coming in and actually saying, hey, you enforcing this as a requirement, right? I think that's going to be a challenge when we don't know how this is going to play out at this stage.
Okay, fair enough. I agree that it's we're still in a very, very early stage. We don't really know how the oversight board is going to work. Rohan, do you have any thoughts?
I just want to talk about the nation state analogy once. So it's a pretty interesting panel. And before I start, I just want to say that compelling is the wrong word regarding what I feel about the Supreme Court. Clickbaity is more of the right description. But regardless, I feel like it's the reason I feel like it's a bit stretched, the comparison between Facebook as a nation state, is because we expect a lot from nation states and we don't expect as much from Facebook. As in, we expect the nation states to tax us, to provide us with water, food, protection from outside threats, and we don't do that from Facebook. And generally, while Facebook has this huge user base that is bigger than any nation state in the world right now, there is also sort of the expectation that this company is going to run with it and make itself a country, which I feel a bit unrealistic. Even though like we see Mark Zuckerberg meeting other heads of government as similar to like he's a head of government, but in this particular instance of the oversight board, I don't think it is a plan to make Facebook a country per se. I mean, you can say this about Libra, the Facebook currency. But as far as the oversight board goes, I feel like it's coming at it from more of an angle of like, we had a problem in content moderation. We are now trying to fix it using this. You can dub it the Supreme Court if you like. But in general, this is not us trying to build institutions that parallel a country. Because this will still also be answerable to the United States standards of free speech, and also to very largely other countries' standards of free speech, depending on how this thing shapes up. So here, I think it's a bit misleading to say that it is going to be a nation state itself.
Let me just draw that parallel out a little bit. So think about it this way. A child doesn't really have a choice about its nationality, right? It's born within a certain national boundary, and it gets whatever rights and services the state deigns to provide to it as determined by the constitution of that particular country. And if the child were to not get those particular obligations from the state, it has an option to go to an independent system that, while part of the state, is also, you know, theoretically not controlled by the state, goes to a judiciary, and that judiciary is able to hold the state apparatus to account. Now, think of it this way. Considering the absolutely gigantic network effects that Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, a lot of these platforms have. For a lot of people, it's not really an option to not be able to use these platforms, right? In some kind of weird sense, once you are quote-unquote born into cyberspace, once you get your smartphone, these are all social networks, these are all social media apps that you absolutely have to have on your phone, you absolutely have to have a presence in. Now, let me just call them digital states, right? So now these digital states also have a certain kind of contract with their users. But let's say the state breaks the contract. Its users can't do anything, right? There isn't really any sort of court of appeals for them to go to. Now, I'm not saying that the oversight board is what Facebook is doing in terms of like establishing that institution. I'm not even saying that this could potentially be a model that we can apply to every single social media company. All I'm saying is, once you kind of break it down to the theoretical elements and you see how these elements are interacting, you start to realize that you actually have a lot more power over the Indian government than you do over what Facebook does. Even though Facebook actually plays a far, far more pervasive role in your life. And at least for me personally, it seems to me that really decentralizing, making these kind of social contracts with user base is really the way that a social media network can really advance into the 21st century, not just be a tool for misinformation, a tool that people look at with distaste. Of course, that's just me being optimistic. I'm not sure that that's ever really going to emerge. But I'm open to your thoughts on the matter.
Yeah, I quite like the analogy where you say that, you know, that Facebook is a lot more pervasive than most nation states, and it has a lot more power than, let's say, the Indian government, because it controls your communication and it has a certain amount of dominance over your social life. That is true. It does, and there is no two ways about it. At the same time, I think it's a bit of a stretch to say that just because it has this power, it can substitute in some way the government that we are subject to, that we have built. I don't know what the proper term is for that.
Not at all. I'm saying that just as we have mechanisms to hold our government accountable to us, there need to be mechanisms for us to be able to hold Facebook accountable as well.
So I strongly agree with that. We should have ways to make Facebook accountable. At the same time, it's sort of where this distinction between a company and a government sets in, right? A government has a primary duty to its citizens. Facebook has its primary duty to its shareholders. And in that sense, this is why we need a data protection law that allows us to have at least some semblance of control over how our data, how our information is going to be used. And we know that this is an important issue within Facebook, because I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but Mark Zuckerberg himself is quite wary of writing things down on paper and then having them, you know, be leaked after years. So what this guy did is that he told Facebook, and I was reading this in Stephen Levy's book called Inside Facebook, and he tells engineers at Facebook that Zuckerberg's chats should not be stored within the server. So you can't actually have a full picture of who Mark Zuckerberg is talking to at all the time. So they get that privacy is an important element. At the same time, it's also an element that allows them to make a lot of money. So, and their obligation, they are held accountable by their shareholders, not by citizens. And that's a huge discrepancy in power. Hopefully we'll see data protection laws that come in, you know, across different countries sort of fix that. But I would not be holding my breath if I were you.
Just to take off on that. So one point, I think in his context, I would argue that it's more secrecy than privacy. But coming back to Anirudh's question, right? I think it is interesting in the sense that what you said about holding them accountable. I want to share your optimism, but I think it colored with some cynicism, especially with, you know, what we saw happening with Mastodon, right? If you remember that when Sanjay Hegde's Twitter account got taken down again, right? He had no real recourse, right? He had to file a court case against them. And for a few days, you know, everyone, or not everyone, if I remember the numbers, it wasn't more than 30, 40,000 people that moved during that period, right? But a few days, you had a lot of people willing to move to new platforms, but then the network effects were so strong of Twitter that I think most of them are back, right? If you look at Mastodon now, especially that Mastodon.social instance where a lot of people had moved, people, including myself, you know, I'm guilty of that, is basically just reposting their Twitter content on it, right? So while that decentralized model, you know, theoretically is the way for users to take back control, right, from these powerful corporations, right? The evidence we've seen so far is that it may not really play out that way.
So what you guys are saying is that unless we change the basic structure of the global political economy, Facebook's not going to be any nicer to its users?
I mean, yes. Also because I think Facebook realizes that there's a big difference in what people say and what people do. And it learned that early in its life as a company. And that's why it doesn't give up control easily. So I don't know if you were active on Facebook at the time when newsfeed actually became a feature. It feels like it's been here forever, but when it became a feature, you had a whole bunch of people. There was a whole group called Students Against Newsfeed, and you had 100,000 people signing up. And at the time, Facebook's user base was not as large. And you had this huge backlash saying that privacy is being violated by this newsfeed. But what actually metrics told Facebook was that people were craving a lot about newsfeed. They were doing so on newsfeed, and it actually increased engagement a lot more than, you know, in a non-newsfeed world. And this is something that Facebook realizes. A lot of people will talk about data protection law, but talk about data portability. End of the day, they will sort of, their actions are going to tell you a lot more than their words are. And this is something that they're going to stick with. And this is precisely the reason I don't think Facebook is going to go away anytime soon, because our actions completely defy what we say, during writing articles or podcasts, so on and so forth. Our actions are actually more important to Facebook, because they can quantify that and say that, well, you say this, but you do something completely different.
Yeah, I think there's actually academic study to back this up. I don't remember the exact paper, but there is a difference between what people say in a survey on privacy and what they actually then go out in the real world and do. There's a pretty significant difference.
Well, my biggest takeaway from all this is that unless Facebook shareholders, also its customers, it's not really going to get its act together, at least in terms of providing more responsible services to all of them. And I don't really see a way to make Facebook shareholders, its customers, short of a global revolution which distributes Facebook shares among all of its users. And then, since that's not going to happen anytime soon, I guess we're just going to have to suck it up and take what Mark Zuckerberg needs to give us. On that optimistic note, thank you both so much for joining me. And thank you for listening to All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website, takshashila.org.in.